The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Jane.
Thanks, Jane. Hi, I'm Jane. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 23rd, 2007. I'm a member of the Atlanta Group. This is my home group. My sponsor is Monica, and I sponsor women. And I want to thank Monica for praying with me before the meeting and saving my life. I met her at my first meeting, and she really saved my life. And thank you for listening to that epic resentment that I just read to you at 6:30. And, you know, that was very indicative of our relationship, because I said, you know, thanks, Marla, for asking me to step in at 3 o'clock today, which is actually such a gift because I didn't have too much time to spend about myself. And that's very indicative of the relationship that I have with my sponsor, is that, you know, let's get into the work, you know, let's do the work. So you're, you know, a clear channel for the girls that you sponsor, and, you know, resentment is the number one offender. And, you know, and I've been really blessed that I've stayed here. You know, I came here, and God willing, a day at a time, I'll have 8 years in October. So I'm so grateful. But not to get ahead of myself, in a general way, what it was like. I grew up in Manhasset, Long Island. I was the youngest of three. I grew up in an alcoholic home. I definitely am from an alcoholic culture. Irish Catholic, Brooklyn born, on both sides. My four grandparents were alcoholic. And I see that that's how people connected. After doing a lot of work and being here for a bit, I realized, you know, the onion has been peeled. I was terribly lonely. Just really lonely. And I had that anxious apartness. And I could see how alcohol worked for people. I don't remember my first drink, but I was 5'11 at 12, and I was very precocious. And when I would run away from home, my parents would come together. So I did that quite a bit. I was truant in school. I never felt like I fit in, and I would come into the city, and I'm going to be 48 in September, so 35 years ago, and I was going to, you know, Studio 54 with my brother. I was in inappropriate relationships with older men, but I'll stick to, you know, alcohol, but it came in lots of different forms. And I was really, you know, the work has revealed to me, just really looking for that acceptance and that love and that security and outside validation from other people. And I chased it, and I always found people that would co-sign that. You know, I ran with a very fast crowd, older crowd, and I drank very young and continuously. And I came into the city to go to school, and I continued. I took my show on the road, and I drank in the city, bars, clubs, you know, after being truant in high school. And I ended up getting into a good school because I'm very manipulative, and I'm very crafty and willful. And my will, you know, those the character defects, but they were defense mechanisms, you know, for me for a long time. And then, you know, skated out of college, took a lot of hostages along the way, consistently drinking, and no one would ever tell me that I'm drinking too much, that they don't like my behavior, that I'm too loud, that I'm aggressive, because I would unfriend you, block you. You don't know me. You have nothing to say to me. And I would compartmentalize. I had lots of different groups of people, lots of plates in the air, which I can still do, as my sponsor sometimes points out to me, but very lovingly. So it was tough. And my, you know, then my brother finished at Amherst, and we were both in the city. I was going to NYU, and then Eureka, I fall into the fashion industry. And what a great place to, you know, for a narcissistic, but really very insecure, superficial, vain, sick, suffering, alcoholic. That was, you know, and it was just like going. And now I'm on like an international level. A few months here, working all these different markets, drinking, still carrying on, you know, with inappropriate partners, but I was completely incapable of forming a true partnership. And I'm twice divorced, so maybe the third time's a charm. I don't know, but I really gave it a shot. I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And in my 20s, I really co-signed my drinking. And I don't want to spend too much time on my drunk log, but I think it's important for you to know that I do qualify here and that I tried it every other way. I tried it every other way. It was my friend. It made me feel better. I didn't feel good. I didn't know that was a soul sickness and a spiritual malady. I didn't know anybody who was sober, but I didn't feel right. And if I had a drink, I could connect with you and I could just, I could breathe. And thank you. And I ended up getting married for the second time when I was 30 to an alcoholic. And then it really just, you know, it just took off. And we had a son when I was, let's see, he's going to be 14 in November. And we were, you know, quite the couple, very social. And I'm drinking around the clock now. And it's just my disease is one of progression. I got sober at 40. And I just drank around the clock. And he was drinking with me until he, when Jack was 18 months old, he said, you know, I'm leaving. And I had been drinking at him for quite a while, but what a great reason to drink. I have 1,000 reasons to drink. None of them are good. And it really turned on me. So for the girl who was drinking to connect with people and the longing and the loneliness, I was in my apartment, holed up with the shades drawn, a 5-year-old on my hip, unemployable, hadn't worked in a decade, a few $100K in debt, divorced twice, drinking myself to death. And I have no doubt that that's what would happen to me if it weren't for you and this program and a very loving, merciful God. So, you know, I was just done. I was broken. I was very mocus. A friend of mine who's struggling with this program, you know, had a little bit of time. It was another, you know, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization situation. And she said, why don't you try a meeting? And I didn't even have it in me to say no. It was so crystal clear that my life was like unmanageable. And I came to Living Now in the morning. And then I came to Atlanta Group that first day and I met my sponsor. And it was a lot of direction that I didn't understand. I didn't understand how pouring coffee, reading appendix, you know, showing up for people, saving seats, dragging my son here every, you know, Tuesday at 5 o'clock to save seats. I didn't know how that was going to change my life. And I've got to say that I've had a spiritual experience as a result of working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, as they're outlined in the book. I don't overthink it. You know, it has worked for me miraculously. My obsession to drink has been completely lifted. I don't know when that happened. You know, that fourth column, being an active mother, I was taking that to the grave with me. I didn't see how that was going to benefit my sponsor. You know, and she said some very powerful things to me. She said, that's who you are in your disease. I know that you love Jack just as much then as you do now. But, you know, your disease is more powerful than your maternal instinct. And you know, by the grace of God, I haven't needed to pick up because, you know, this life that I've been given, you know, a day at a time with service, a lot of service. I get to go to 9 meetings a week. I sponsor women who save my life. And they keep me, you know, immersed in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been through very challenging things, like all of us in the room in sobriety. Lost my brother. And when I was 3 years sober from an overdose, my father passed 4 weeks later. And it was tough. But I'm so grateful I was sober for that. Because my sobriety, I was immersed in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was not a foxhole prayer. And my sponsor said, you know, take your girl's calls. And that was 4.5 years ago. And, you know, we carry our wounded here. It's a beautiful thing. I was told it will get better. You'll be happy again. And, you know, that's my experience. They're in a better place. I'm right with God. And I have, you know, I really walk with God. I'm very God-directed. I bring everything to him. And I got a great career. That I love, that I get to be of service in my relationship with my ex-husband, that I really, I mean, was so unmerciful toward him. Now he's sober 11 years, so he left me to get sober. My son, who's going to be 14, is 2 sober parents. It's such a gift. He knows I'm sober, and he thinks it's wonderful. And thanks, Susan. And I just can't even begin to convey the miracles that I get to see on a daily basis just from showing up and suiting up and saying yes. My life and everything in it It's property of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new, what I see, and this isn't, you know, my experience, I see that it's easier to stay sober than to get sober. And it looks like there's a big lapse, like between 5 and 12 years, and a lot of people don't, you know, AA seems to hand them a big, beautiful life on a silver platter, and then that's the first thing forgotten. Then the meetings start to, you know, dwindle away and everything. And I really, I just, it's so, for me, it's like to be in the middle of AA and to, you know, continue on this path and to show up. And my favorite line in the book that I have to always, you know, our very lives depend upon the constant thought of others and how we can help them, you know, meet their needs. So, you know, for me, it's really about service now at this point. And this is an amazing home group. There's so much love in this room. And I want to thank you all very much for my sobriety. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Our second 10-minute speaker is Marty.
Hi, my name is Marty. I'm an alcoholic. How's that? I appreciate that commitment. I forgot what I was going to say. So, I'll just start with the if you're new. It still baffles me that I'm in here. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I guess I'm reflective because I'm going to speak, you know, in front of my home group. But on the way up here, there's a liquor store. It's called Lehman's or something. I mean, I know the name. I'd never shopped there, but I just, you know, I passed by it every Tuesday from work. And I saw these two kids out there with their skateboards sitting down, and there's a bunch of bags, like they've been shopping. And clearly it wasn't them. So mother and dad were inside shopping for liquor, wine. It's Park Avenue. It's wine, probably. And my mind immediately went to like judgment, and it's so funny how far I get ahead of myself or away from myself, and it's like how do I know? I listened to two women behind me and talk about like, oh, that's exactly what I would do. Like, you can tell she's tired. She dropped the bags and the kids out front and went to get a bottle of wine because that's what we got to do. And, you know, she may drink that after the dinner's made, the kids are in bed, and then she has a glass of wine or he has a glass of wine. I mean, I don't know, but I know for me, I'm in here. I'm an alcoholic. This is a tricky, tricky disease where I don't think I belong sometimes. And you know, I run the show, so you hear that a lot. It's that I think I can do something. I wrote a fear list out today about this. You know, all I'm doing is reporting. I'm showing up for this. And to let you know that I've been sober for 7 years. My sober date is February 25th, 2008. It's good to have the 5 to 10 year group tonight as the 10-minute speakers. And this was my first meeting. We were downstairs for whatever reason. It was an anniversary meeting. And I didn't know I was told to come here by a psychiatrist. And I was seeking help. And it wasn't for alcoholism. But he told me about a particular group. And I showed up. I don't know why. Before this, I don't know why a quiet, dorky kid from Wyoming would show up in New York and get sober here, but that was the only way it could happen. I never saw myself as that. I saw myself as Max Rage, who was going to leave Wyoming and take over L.A. and with the rest of the hair bands in the 80s and 90s and just change, you know, the face of the world. I thought that same thought in 2007 when I moved back here for the third or fourth time and really make it stick. And it didn't work that way. I mean, I spent a month still glamorizing that rock and roll lifestyle. And I can still do that today. Like, My wife was like, why are you watching that documentary about so-and-so who just like clearly doesn't have it together? And like, what does it mean that pulls, you know, it's like, do I really like music or I just like that lifestyle? You know, I had my first drink when my sister Heather was in Germany. She had been run over. My parents took off for that summer to be by her side, and I had the best summer of my life. It was my first drink, my first two beers, Coors, and it all went to my head. It was a big bubble formed around me, and I just could not wait to get back to school and be that. And that projected on, that went on to, I quit college. Once I got to college, I didn't drink heavy then, but I quit college to live that rock and roll lifestyle. I ended up joining a band in Denver. We moved to New York to make it big and destroy rock music, and that didn't work. But just that, if I can take it to Bill's story, where I always thought Bill was somebody, like he had high prestige when he came back from the war, and that he was... Thank you. And that he was a leader of men. Like, he actually did lead these men. But if you look, it's like he fancied himself that. I never caught that until a couple of months ago. And then that's what I did. Is like, I always thought somebody was better than me. I need to compete against you. I envy you. And I'm still better than you somehow. But I have the lowest self-esteem that I'm lost. And my sponsor has me pray to be real. Like, and that's really on so many different fronts. Like, I fantasize so much about my surroundings, about where I'm at in the world. And for me to get real with people, get real with my home group, real with my sponsor, let them know what I'm doing. Like, 3 years into our relationship, I was still not telling them everything. And that's a lack of trust. I have a hard time with intimacy, and what is that like? What am I so afraid of? And doing that, going back to that fear list, it's like, why am I so afraid? Because I think that I can do it myself. I'm paraphrasing, but I get myself so far, and that's what's happened. That's happened in sobriety. It's happened before. Like, I was a whirlwind. I married in my 20s, my late 20s, and that marriage was awash in alcoholism. It was just like swimming in alcohol. And I always thought she was the problem. You know, you hear that a lot. I heard that a lot. I just didn't see it until I did a very thorough four-step. And I'll have to make it amends for the amends. You know, it's second time in the steps for me. And... yeah, I guess 3 years into this, I mean, I went to Atlantic Group meetings 7 days a week. I had seven commitments. I was a big shot on Saturday night. I thought in my head, and I remember, I was having a really bad go at it, and Bob, steering committee member, said, "Like, what's the matter?" And I was like, "I want a drink." And I never thought that. It said that. It just came out. He's like, "That's because you're not asking for help." And like that still plays in my mind a lot. It's like Stacy talks about, like, the broken shoelace. Like, if I'm breaking a shoelace or something like that and I'm really upset, then I need to take a look at that. And it always goes back to inventory for me. And I never thought I could write good inventory, and that was my problem at 3 years. And I got a new sponsor, and it turned out it wasn't the inventory. It was the fact that I had a God that I could not open up to. And I really had to tell that God that I didn't trust him. There was no way I trust you. And once I got that off my chest, things started to open up. I started to develop a higher power that I could call mine, and that would allow me to let him know that I don't trust you, and that we could start from there. And You know, today I'm in the same job I'm in. I'm married again. My relationship is much different from my first one. I still have some of the same characteristics that I work out with my sponsor. But that's the thing. I keep going back to my sponsor with this, and it's the closest relationship I've ever had. And if you are new here tonight, it's my first meeting. I got a sponsor. He got me. He chased me to the bathroom. And I assured, thank you. I assured him, like, I'm coming. And that night changed my life. I don't know how you get sober in the summer. I got sober in the winter. But it's your time. It was my time. And I'm very thankful to be here. I wake up in the morning and I thank God. And I still thank God at night for being sober. And if you've had the kind of life that, where you want to stop and you can't, you know, this program allows me to be thankful. I was never thankful without this program. Thanks.